This is the Morning Mix on KPFA. I'm Anthony Fest with Adrian Lobby. What are some of the problems facing African people today, and what lies at the root of these problems? We'll explore these questions with Omala Yeshitela. He's chair of the African People's Socialist Party. He's visiting the Bay Area this week on a speaking tour, and he joins us this morning in the KPFA studio. Omala Yeshitela, welcome to KPFA.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Okay, tell us first, what is the African People's Socialist Party?
The African People's Socialist Party is a founding member of the African Socialist International, which is a revolutionary organization of African people throughout the world that is committed to liberating and uniting African people worldwide.
And tell us a little bit about its history.
Its history, the African People's Socialist Party was founded in the United States in 1972. It was founded as a process coming out of the Civil Rights Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the Black Power Movement, et cetera, during the 60s. And in 1972, the African People's Socialist Party itself was born. It was born because we had concluded that we had to move beyond simply protest politic and toward the question of the capture, the seizure of political power and wielding political power in defense of the interests of our people.
Now, before we continue on about the party, tell us a little bit about your own political history. You've worn a lot of hats over the years.
Yeah, I've worn a lot of hats over the years, and I was a member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in the 1960s. I was a member of an organization, JOMO, and that was created in the late 1960s after the U.S. government had successfully neutralized the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, arresting many people and actually terrorizing a lot of other people. And I was born in Florida. I grew up in Florida. As a young man, I assumed that the problems I was confronted with had to do with being a young African person living in a small southern town, decided that I'd get away from it, join the U.S. Army to see the world, and ended up in Berlin, Germany, and had incredible experiences that helped me to understand that the problem I was looking at was not based in Florida, where I grew up, but there was an international contradiction, and it was a problem that had to do with a social system. And the social system was one that was born out of slavery and colonialism and had simply mutated or changed how it looked over a period of years, et cetera. And that is what mobilized me and helped me to understand that I had to be involved politically to change this situation.
And just to take a step back for a moment for our younger listeners who might not recognize the acronym SNCC, tell us what the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee did.
The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee was an incredible organization comprised essentially of young Africans who, like the name suggests, most of whom were students who worked in some of the most dangerous places in the South, particularly in Mississippi, southern Georgia, Alabama, et cetera. Some of the names that became most famously associated with SNCC were Stokely Carmichael, who became Kwame Ture, A-Trap Brown, James Foreman. And it was the organization that resulted in the demand slogan of Black Power in 1966 that really mobilized African and other oppressed peoples around the world and in this country as well. It was the organization that played a primary role in Lowndes County, Alabama in 1965 that led to the creation of the Lowndes County Freedom Organization that was popularly known as the Black Panther Party because of the symbol, and that symbol and that name was one that was adopted by Huey P. Newton and the people who grew the Black Panther Party here in the Bay Area.
Okay, now let's come back to the present day and the African People's Socialist Party. 8:46 on the Morning Mix on KPFA. I'm Anthony Fest with Adrian Lobby. Our guest is Omala Yeshitela with the African People's Socialist Party. He's the chair. He's visiting from Florida on a speaking tour. Now, I presume the party's main purpose is not running candidates for city councils or school boards or other electoral offices. Tell us what your main goal is as a party.
Well, we have done those kinds of things, but we don't see those activities as ends unto themselves. In fact, it is something that we do because it's absolutely necessary to utilize all the political space that's available, the democratic space that's available. But our objective is to capture political power. Our objective is to liberate ourselves as a people. We see Africans existing as a nation that's been dispersed all over the world, and where we've been separated by artificial borders in Africa and around the world, and that this serves to expropriate tremendous amounts of value from African people, both human and material. The woman who and the man who just spoke about what's happening in Nigeria is one example of that, and the fact that the same chevron that we're talking about operating in Nigeria operates here is an example of what it is that we're looking about at in terms of the expropriation of value from African people. So our purpose is to seize power, a political power. We exist in Colombia and South America. We exist in the Bahamas. We exist in West Africa. We exist in East Africa, and we're working in South Africa, and we exist throughout Europe. So it is a political party that has as its objective the liberation and unification of Africa and African people worldwide to capture political power.
This is Adrienne Lobby. I want to talk about socialism. I see the recent events in Egypt, people striking out for freedom and all around North Africa. But they don't seem to be striking out against capitalism. I don't hear that as one of the slogans, or am I just missing that?
You may not be missing that. The fact is that what we saw in Egypt was essentially a spontaneous rebellion by people who are tired of being oppressed. It was a movement of self-defense. There does not appear in Egypt at this point to have developed a political party, a political organization that had the capacity of putting forth a revolutionary national democratic program for the people in Egypt. And that's one of the concerns that many people have, because as you saw immediately what Mubarak did, and some suggest, and I think not without foundation, with the assistance of the United States, he first put Suleiman, who as his vice president, Suleiman tied to the CIA forever. Even people who liberal that many people like El Baradei, who has served in imperialist circles for a lifetime. And then, of course, the power of the military, who has been funded more second to Israel in terms of the resources for all this time, and it's still questionable what is going to happen in Egypt. I think it's very powerful, very important to have seen that mass uprising, and I think we will see, as this process goes on, people will develop a capacity to put forth really consolidated demands that will challenge the social system itself. Because when we look at what's happening in Egypt, it is a consequence of capitalist oppression and the maintaining. And right now, what we see is a struggle to maintain the same social system. That's what's happening in Libya. That the balance of power is being seriously challenged in part by what's happening or trying to happen in Egypt, Tunisia, Bahrain, and various other places like that. So I think the question of socialism is one that we will see emerge in a very sharp way, because it is capitalism, notwithstanding the consciousness of the people involved, it is capitalism under assault in Egypt, Tunisia, and these various other places that we're looking at.
And of course, we can't be on that topic and not mention the U.S. and allied intervention in Libya. Your analysis of that?
Well, I think it's really clear that one of the concerns that the U.S. and what we're characterizing as allies and one of the real concerns is the change in the balance of power. In this instance, in North Africa, Middle East, but that change has been happening around the world as far as the U.S. is concerned. It's been happening in South America. So Hugo Chavez and those forces are the enemy, and given an opportunity would attack Chavez just as they're attacking Libya. It's been changing in the Asian Pacific China region. So Korea is the boogeyman that justifies sending more forces there to challenge, to deal with the China growing influence. AFRICOM is now necessary to deal with contention with China, who is a growing economic and political force there. And now what we have in this particular region, we have a situation where Iran has emerged as a very significant political force, especially after the Iraqi war, the attack on Iraq, which was the contending entity there that was supported by the U.S. for a long period of time. And now Iran has grown and influenced a Shia majority there, becoming now the U.S. makes this war that results in empowering Iran even more. Iran, terribly anti-imperialist in terms of its attitude toward the U.S., with good reason. And then you have the thing that's happening in Egypt. And Bahrain and Oman and Yemen, and talk about killing their own people. You look at what's happening in Yemen and Bahrain, who've been satellites for the U.S. for the longest period of time. Then you've got the illegitimate state of Israel that functions as an outpost, a military outpost of U.S. and Western imperialism to protect the oil, et cetera. And so that now you have Libya, who, with all these contradictions, has been hardline as far as the Palestinian issue is concerned. So there's a major shift of balance of power there, resulting in forces like Iran and Libya gaining relative to the influence of Egypt and all these other forces that's been a bulwark, you know, for imperialism in that area. Libya had to go.
Let me see if I'm hearing you right. You're saying that because the U.S. is losing economic power for various reasons all around the world, but often people's rising up to control their own country, they're now having to use more military power and go into areas where maybe before they just sent the corporation.
It's a major crisis of that sort. Imperialism is suffering a major crisis. There was a time when military intervention like this was a show of strength by imperialism. They could take anything they want. Now it's self-defense. It's the whole imperialist thing is attempting to unravel. And Libya, standing next to Iran, becomes a power compared to what they were before, as long as Egypt and these other forces were there.
And then you have to bring that home and say, what does it cost the American, African-American communities to maintain this kind of war effort?
But not only that, but what does it cost? You look at California, for example, which has the second largest prison population in the world, second to the United States. And the majority of those people in prison are Africans and Mexicans in this state. And you got half the prison population in this country Africans. You've got police murders every place throughout our community. So there's that war that's always been there, that's been intensifying as a part of the as a response to this crisis and the attempt to shift the burden of the economic crisis onto the most vulnerable sectors of the country, which includes the African population.
Omali Eshetela with the African People's Socialist Party, and we mustn't wrap up this segment without mentioning that you have a speaking engagement this evening in Oakland at the Humanist Hall, 390 27th Street, beginning at 7 o'clock.
And I would hope that people who are listening would come out for that so that we can have this discussion in much more detail and much more extensively.
Omali Eshetela, chair of the African People's Socialist Party. It's been too short a time, but we thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.